are listening to a special edition of Road of His Radio. I'm Pat Corain on Twitter at Pat Corain, and with me is Sean Siegel on Twitter at FF underscore Contrarian. Sean, what's going on?
Not too much. Just did the long drive back and forth. We had the great Christmas vacation in Kansas City and the debut of Pat Mahomes. So a lot of exciting NFL developments. Interesting week in that for many people, the most exciting game was one that featured a backup quarterback. But yeah, we have a lot of coaching decisions to talk about, the playoffs to talk about. Obviously want to promote Pete Overzet's appearance in our other show as much as possible, since Pete is always fantastic. And we have Blair coming on to do a great discussion of a zero running back and rookie running backs article that he wrote this week. Blair is fantastic, so looking forward to that.
Yep, and that's Blair Andrews of the Road of His Report. And as Sean mentioned, and the reason I say this was a special edition is that this week we have two episodes of the show. We just dropped one with Peter Overzet, covering kind of the FFPC playoff tournament, and also just looking ahead at some of the, you know, the playoff games coming up. And then in this episode, is in addition to the interview with Blair, we're going to be looking at some of the coaching vacancies and what kind of impact that may have. But Sean, I mean, I feel like you undersold it here, like with Pat Mahomes and your excitement level, because we have some show notes, and in the notes here, you have arm strength of Matthew Stafford, mobility of Russell Wilson, accuracy of Drew Brees, release of Aaron Rodgers. It seems like you're kind of excited with what you saw in week 17.
Right, so we finally see what the Chiefs have seen in Mahomes. We see why they traded all of that draft capital to get up and get him, even though they plan to play a different quarterback this season. So we have a team that's playing a separate quarterback career year in his own right for Alex Smith, but has all kinds of salary cap issues, and now will not have as much in the way of draft picks next year to replenish for trying to fill out the roster that has these salary cap issues. So when you get to see Mahomes, you're definitely hoping that he can be this franchise savior, because there could be plenty of cap casualties. And then he comes through with this fantastic performance against the Denver Broncos using backups. He targets Albert Wilson repeatedly, doesn't have Tyreek Hill, doesn't have Travis Kelce. So skeleton crew moves the team at will. They even went to a fullback for their running back most of the game, and he looked absolutely fantastic. So, a little bit of hyperbole there, obviously. Probably not quite the level of mobility that we see from Russell Wilson, and certainly, it's way too early. It's way too early to give him any of these characteristics, but certainly the accuracy of a Drew Brees. But he showed everything you could possibly want. Rolling to his right, throwing back across his body 30 yards, just hitting wide receivers right in the chest. So it's an exciting time to be a Kansas City fan when you have Alex Smith looking the best that he's ever looked in and leading them into the playoffs. And then you have a future with a potential franchise quarterback. After they passed on Deshaun Watson to make that pick, they were in a similar situation, I think, to the Cleveland Browns and plenty of other teams who passed. And now it looks like, not that he's going to be Watson. We've already seen that Watson is an impending superstar, maybe the most exciting player in the league going forward. But Mahomes looks excellent in his own right.
And what do you think the right way for the Chiefs to play this is?
Well, it's a difficult situation because I don't think you can sit on him too much longer. You have the contract control for a certain period of time. Obviously, they'll wield things like the franchise tag in the future. But you have this window where you have a quarterback with a contract that is manageable, and then you can build around him. Unfortunately, with the Chiefs, they're also paying another quarterback a huge amount of money, so they're not really going to be taking advantage of that the way that a different team might. And especially when he looks ready at this point, there you can't help but have a little bit of regret. However, just because he looked ready in week 17 certainly doesn't mean that he would have been ready in week 1 or week 6. It's more of a question, I think, for next season. And Alex Smith probably goes back into that quarterback market via some some type of trade or other roster decision, and you know, into a market that has a lot of quarterback need, but also a lot of intriguing quarterback possibilities. So we'll talk about that on next week's show.
Awesome. Okay, so let's dive into some of these coaching openings, which are kind of the more pressing thing here. Before we do that, I want to talk about SeatGeek. Excited to have SeatGeek on as a sponsor here. Been using SeatGeek for a while. Great app. It's by far the easiest way that I found to shop for tickets, sports tickets, concert tickets, whatever. You can just go on a couple taps, instantly find your seats. They kind of rate the seat by like how good of a deal it is, which I think is cool. Makes it a lot easier to find tickets and make sure that you're paying a good price for them. So, you know, you should have the SeatGeek app. If you do not, you're in luck, because if you're a Rotoviz Radio listener, you can get $20 off on your first SeatGeek purchase. All you have to do is download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code RVRadio. Promo code RVRadio for $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase. Seriously, download the app if you've not used it. It's great. All right, let's get into these coaching vacancies. Quite a Black Monday here. Slash, you know, post week 17 and already rumors of who some of these coaching vacancies might be filled here as we get later in the week. But yeah, let's just run down here. Fired coaches: Jim Caldwell, John Fox, Jack Del Rio, Chuck Pagano, Bruce Arians retiring. And then some surprising coaches that didn't get fired. Marvin Lewis, he survives. Hugh Jackson survives after going 0-16 for now. I still gotta think he's fired, you know, / replaced before a new season begins. But still alive right now. And then Dirk Cutter, I think, also pretty shocking that he managed to keep his job after an incredibly disappointing season for the Bucks. So, what do you think about all of that, Sean? The guys that got fired or left, as in the case of Bruce Arians, and then the guys who didn't.
Well, we can definitely see that the different expectations in different markets and for different teams really inform what the general manager and the owner decide to do in terms of the head coach. And a lot of it just comes down to whether or not you have a quarterback, which may or may not be the complete way to evaluate your head coach. It's interesting because we have Jeff Fisher talking about wanting to get back into the league, and you look at some of his recent quarterbacks, you know, you have Case Keenum, you have Nick Foles, you have Jared Goff. All of those guys are going to be playing on highly seeded teams in the NFC playoffs. Foles, obviously, mostly by virtue or completely by virtue of the injury there, but guys who are going to be trusted in the playoffs.
Yeah, and you don't need Foles to make the case. It's like Goff and Keenum are going to be, you know, they've had amazing seasons. They both had amazing seasons after looking like absolute garbage under John Fox. So it's just amazing. Like, that's such an indictment of him as a coach.
I think so. And then you look at the situation and you see Hugh Jackson, who is basically being given a pass on a 1-31 stretch because of the quarterback situation. And I mean, that's almost a situation where Jackson is making someone like Jeff Fisher look like a combination of Bill Belichick and Vince Lombardi. I mean, we're talking about someone who is getting a free pass on incredibly poor play from the team, poor in-game decisions, poor preparation. You have that final game of the season where the Pittsburgh Steelers are benching anyone on their team who is competent at all, and the Browns still can't come through. I think that's disappointing for Cleveland fans. It's disappointing for fantasy owners of some of those key players who certainly are hoping for a breakout next season for someone like Josh Gordon, for someone like Corey Coleman, you know, better usage of the running backs. And, you know, just you want to see good football. So that's disappointing. When you look at the openings that we have now, how would you rank them in terms of their desirability? We have the Lions, with Stafford there. We have the Colts with Luck, presumably. The Raiders with Carr. That position already looks like it's going to be filled by John Gruden. The Bears, an interesting guy in Mitchell Trubisky. And then the Cardinals and Giants, both teams without quarterbacks. But the Cards have David Johnson and what to this point has been a pretty tough defense. And the Giants have all of those receiving weapons that they could build around.
Yeah, and I guess we should mention that there's been some turnover with the Green Bay Packers, and there's like the potential that Mike McCarthy might not be back, which I think that would obviously jump up as the number one job if that were to happen. But yeah, I think the number one job that's still open, because I'm assuming that the Raiders job is going to be filled by John Gruden, I think is the Colts. Now, it's obviously really scary, and we have a really great article by Dr. Jeff Budoff, who is saying that Luck could not be out of the woods yet in terms of his shoulder, and so that's a real issue. But if you just look at quarterback situation, with the Lions, you have Stafford, but it seems like they're looking at a defensive coach, and then potentially keeping Jim Bob Cooter around. So I don't know. Like, if you're a defensive coach, are you real excited about that setup plus a defense that isn't that great? And then the Bears, you have Trubisky, who's a total question mark. The Cardinals don't have a quarterback at all. The Giants, benched Eli, brought him back. He's kind of a shell of what he once was. So, I mean, I would take the upside bet on Luck. And if I was, a younger offensive-minded coach who thought maybe I could get a second chance if Luck isn't what he was or misses another season and I get fired as a result, I mean, I would take my upside shot if I thought that I could, maybe get a second head coaching job in 5 years or something if it doesn't work out.
I'd agree, and I think this is a great year to be one of these trendy candidates, because unlike most seasons where the jobs come open because there are some real problems, you have terrible quarterback play or you just have a franchise in complete disarray. In 2018, we've got some teams that are pretty interesting. I think I would rate the Lions number one because Matthew Stafford, he's just been doing a fantastic job carrying that team to around the 500 record. He protected his coaches there for as long as he possibly could just by, with his physical performance and willing that team into a situation where they were competitive despite having almost nothing other than him. He made Marvin Jones into a fantastic player this year. He's been supporting Golden Tate. He's been doing it all without a running game. I think that if you have that franchise quarterback, then that is a job that you really want. And, if you are one of these top defensive coordinators, certainly Matt Patricia, the Patriots defensive coordinator, is probably the front runner there if he ends up being interested. I think the challenge of rebuilding that defense and knowing that you have Stafford to rely on to bail you out in the interim, that's going to be pretty intriguing. But I really would like any of these jobs. The Cardinals need a quarterback. The Giants need a quarterback. But there are a lot of interesting quarterbacks available this season. So unless you have one guy that you want at QB and don't feel like you're in a position to really get to them, then those jobs are also pretty interesting. With the Giants, you're going to get to build around Odell Beckham, Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram. So if you pick the right guy, you could be very good in a hurry there. And then obviously that raises your stature very quickly as a head coach.
Yeah, that's a great point about the Giants going to be having a high draft pick because, the Eli, it sort of turns Eli into almost an asset if he's able to basically steer the ship for 1 year as you break in, a new quarterback at the end of the year. And you're kind of done a favor here by just the absolute mishandling of the Eli benching by Bob McAdoo, because you actually now, if you do have a young quarterback that you want to bench Eli for, you don't have to worry about breaking a streak. So you can kind of do it whenever it makes sense to do it. And, you can thank Bob McAdoo for stupidly doing it this year for no reason at all. So yeah, I think actually that job is probably sneaky good. The Cardinals job really scares me because, I don't know. I guess I don't know as much about this quarterback class as you, but do you think they can kind of come out with a potential franchise guy? Because, you know, you're also probably losing Larry Fitzgerald. And then the other thing with their defense is, like, I'm always a little bit wary in the NFL of counting on a defense to stay good for, like, a while. So, you know, their defense has been good, but as we look, like, 2 years down the line, 3 years down the line, I don't know that you can count on that.
Well, the Cardinals will be a very interesting team to follow because they need a head coach in addition to needing the quarterback. So they have a lot of moving pieces. In the past, we might have looked at Bruce Arians and said he prefers this kind of quarterback. And so, you know, we're limited to the guys he might go for. But we really don't know that with all the changes that are taking place there. And so with the draft slot that they're going to have, you know, maybe you have these interesting guys in Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, riskier in terms of size, perhaps, and having some more red flags, but also having some very interesting upside. At the same time, the Cardinals may be in position to, you know, look at someone like an Alex Smith if the Chiefs make him available, looking at someone like a Tyrod Taylor, since the Bills, despite making the playoffs, look like they want to move on. So the Cardinals, with having a David Johnson, with having a defense that is probably playoff ready, they might be able to take a hybrid approach where they actually add a starting caliber veteran and an interesting, not just developmental quarterback, but a high ceiling potential quarterback early on.
What do you think about the Raiders' job? My feeling was that was probably the best job, but it's off the table. Do you think it was the best job? What do you think of the Gruden fit, assuming he does get the job, and just the situation overall?
That wouldn't have been my top choice, although certainly there are some pieces there. Derek Carr looked so poor this season, and I don't think that's all on him. Obviously, Amari Cooper had a terrible season, and so there's a little bit of a chicken or the egg argument there. Michael Crabtree also had sort of a stealth, awful season, and now there are reports that they're going to move on from him. And so if you're looking at building a team with a couple of very talented defensive players, but your offense is Derek Carr to Amari Cooper, that doesn't look nearly as exciting as it did 12 months ago. However, John Gruden, obviously one of the most exciting head coaches in a variety of ways. And the real question will be, is he still that innovative mind? Is he still someone who is going to be on the forefront of things, or during the time off, has he let his previous ideas really solidify and not want to get off of those things, not want to adapt to a lot of the changes that we've seen in the NFL in the interim? Now, you know, you listen to his commentary, he's the best or one of the best guys on TV, both in terms of the enthusiasm and then what he brings to the game, in terms of talking about the X's and O's and what's going on there. And you get a sense that he will still bring that innovative mind to the Raiders. And if he does, I think it's very exciting. But certainly, you know, anytime someone has been off for that long, has had success, you wonder if they'll be willing to really embrace new ideas and do what needs to be done now, as opposed to what they have done in the past.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll be really interesting to see what Gruden has, because I think in some ways, you know, he's just sort of like the offense that he used to run. It's sort of a very kind of standard West Coast style system. It's not not all that exciting potentially, but if he's been you know, drawing up new plays all these years and figuring out various things he wants to experiment with, and if that's part of what's leading him to come back and get a head coaching job again in the first place, then he could be one of the most, you know, exciting and innovative coaches that we have, if he's been basically in the lab cooking stuff up that no one's seen, you know, for a decade. So, and, you know, he was kind of a young, exciting coach there when he first came up with the Raiders, and then obviously won a Super Bowl with the Bucks and kind of flamed out after that. But certainly he'll have the potential for really strong quarterback play with Derek Carr. So it's an exciting matchup. I think it'll be good to have him back in the league. It'll just be kind of fun. I'm always in favor of, you know, smart offensive coaches added to the NFL. That's always a good thing in my book.
What do you think of the trendy second chance coordinator guys who look like they will get an opportunity to show that they learned from the first time around, talking about Josh McDaniels and Pat Shurmur?
I don't know as much about Shurmur, but certainly what he's done with Case Keenum. And really, I mean, you know, Bradford looked like he was primed to have it too. And mid-season, he had a switch over to Keenum. It's not like he was prepping the offseason with Keenum. So I think what he's done this year has been incredibly impressive. And, you know, certainly I would be interested in, if I had a team, he would be one of the guys I would be looking at for sure. And Josh McDaniels, I think, is like, absolutely bring him in. Like, I've talked about this before. Like, I think it's obviously pretty clear that part of the reason he didn't work out in Denver was ego. And I think probably he had too big of a role where he's kind of immediately involved in, you know, who they're drafting, et cetera. So, but I, you know, that's what I want. I want a guy who's an innovative offensive mind in charge of the team. And McDaniels is who's got kind of more upside than McDaniels if he's got his shit together now as a head coach. I would love to have Josh McDaniels as my head coach. I think he's in a position where he can be very selective about what job he takes, and that's probably the biggest impediment to adding him if you're a team. But if you're writing off Josh McDaniels, I think you're making a big mistake.
Looking at that group as perhaps the most likely group, although certainly there are plenty of other contenders, and the changes that teams are going to be making this offseason, what do you think the fantasy repercussions are for some of the highest profile players in this group, teams changing head coaches? Maybe start with Golden Tate and Marvin Jones. You mentioned the possibility that they would maintain their coordinator, but if they have a defensive-minded head coach, regardless of whether they keep their coordinator, is that going to be good for any of the players? It would seem like a loss of volume certainly could be devastating for both Golden Tate and Marvin Jones.
Yeah, I think they are best off if the status quo is maintained to, you know, the extent that can occur when you lose your head coach. So basically, if Jim Bob Cooter stays, I think they're in better shape than if he leaves. I think one thing that everyone talks about with the Lions is that they don't have a running game. I guess my feeling on that is, like, I don't know if that's as big a problem as some others might. I think it's probably, like, if they had this offense and a really good defense, they'd be just fine even without the running game. But if you bring a defensive-minded head coach, like, those guys generally want to be able to run the ball really well. So that could be devastating for Tate and Jones. I think they have to be and if you own them in Dynasty, you have to be praying right along with them that that they retain Jim Bob Cooter or bring in an offensive-minded head coach who's going to continue to rely on the passing game.
Yeah, well, they've talked already about wanting to bring in and improve their running back stable. And I think the thing that brings to mind is what the Seahawks did last year in adding Eddie Lacy. And very quickly, they found out that it wasn't the running backs that were the problem. It was the offensive line doesn't provide really any opportunities, any running lanes. Now, they had a little bit of success with some guys way down the depth chart. And I think I would prefer the Lions go that route as opposed to thinking they can fix the running back problem purely by bringing in one of these high-profile runners, especially because the team needs a lot of help. They need a lot of work on that offensive line. They need a lot of help on defense there. You mentioned excitement for Carr. Gruden going to quickly fix Derek Carr and Amari Cooper, or at least jump them back up to the level we saw previously to 2017?
Yeah, I think there's potential for that to happen. I'm definitely excited for Carr. I just think it's good news for Carr. It remains to be seen how big of a positive boost this is for Carr, but this is exactly the type of change that you're hoping for with Derek Carr. I mean, Jack Del Rio is always, he's sort of on the list for me of guys where I'm just like skeptical. Like, I feel like you're kind of holding your team back, kind of the Jeff Fisher, John Fox list where, you know, I think John Gruden has potential to get more out of Derek Carr than we've seen certainly this year, but even overall. And then Amari Cooper, I don't know, Sean. Like, I'm starting to feel like, to be fair, we've never really seen what we've hoped to see from Amari Cooper. You know, maybe if Crabtree leaves and Carr gets right and Cooper stops dropping everything, it could all come together. What are your thoughts on Cooper?
I still go back to his college resume, his athleticism, those first two seasons in the NFL. And, you know, you look at the last couple of weeks and even limited, he's had those long touchdowns. Now he needs a lot more volume. He needs a lot more routes and targets in areas of the field that can be high value and, you know, really have him be the focal point of the offense if we are going to see him jump to the level that many of us hope for. But even in a disaster of a season this year, and there's really no other way to look at it when you have that picture of unmitigated disaster. I mean, it's Amari Cooper right there. But, you know, there still have been a few positive signs. He still is that elite athlete. And I think that that's one of the things that people forget or overlook with him. You know, he's faced plenty of skeptics right along the way because he doesn't leap, but everything else he does athletically extremely well. So I think Gruden will put him in a position where it's not this contested catch or this going up to make this incredible play in the air, and will instead pepper him with so many of the targets where, you know, he just has to separate catch and go. And so there's nowhere to go but up for both of these guys, and I think we'll see them go up. The question is just how far they're able to rise.
Let's touch on David Johnson briefly, who I think, you know, as opposed to Carr and Cooper, Bruce Arians departing opens up a lot of downside risk for Johnson. He loses his quarterback in Palmer. He loses kind of the total blueprint of the offense with Arians leaving. It's possible, probably not likely, but it's possible, you know, the next coach won't want to utilize Johnson quite as heavily. What do you think, you know, how bad could it get for Johnson? You know, how risky exactly is this situation now for Johnson, especially as it applies to kind of his dynasty value, which, you know, is off the heights of preseason, but, you know, he's still an absolutely premium dynasty asset. And then, you kind of alluded to this already, but could maybe this situation stabilize in a way, you know, stabilize more quickly, as in everything's good enough around Johnson to where he can be productive in 2018, and he does just fine. So where do you kind of see this situation going here?
Well, in terms of how bad it could obviously get very, very bad. We talk a lot about running backs who are game script independent, and Johnson definitely fits that category. One of the exciting things about him last year, you know, beyond just the pure point totals, was that he was being used so heavily in both the running game and the passing game. He had double-digit expected points as a runner, double-digit expected points as a receiver, and then, you know, he's a huge physical talent, and so he's able to capitalize on those expected points. On the other hand, just because someone is game script independent doesn't mean that they're total situation independent. And if anyone ever doubted that, we got the clearest example that you'll ever get this season with Todd Gurley, where you have someone with a profile that is game script independent, but the difference between him this year and last year, you know, you're talking about the least efficient running back in the NFL and then one of the greatest fantasy forces we've ever seen. So it could get bad for Johnson if he falls into a situation that is more like what Todd Gurley had to deal with pre-2017. That being said, I don't think that's actually what's going to happen, because the Cardinals do have plenty of paths to replacing the quarterback position with someone who is at least competent. And then when you look at the level that Carson Palmer has been playing at for the last 3 or 4 years, I don't know that that is a level that's going to be that difficult to reach. Now, you know, it's very easy to undervalue or understate just the importance of even mediocre starting NFL quarterbacks. And certainly, you know, when the Cards have to go to Blaine Gabbert or Drew Stanton, you see that difference. But, you know, Carson Palmer is not the type of quarterback who single-handedly was putting a running back constantly in the red zone, constantly at the goal line, where they could score points. So if the Cardinals are able to to fix their situation, get a competent starting quarterback. I think David Johnson, with his talent level, with his hybrid flexible profile, will be able to maintain most of that fantasy value.
All right, one last situation, the Bears. We have Mitch Trubisky potentially benefiting, Tariq Cohen as well. What do you think the upside is for these guys?
Well, Trubisky is definitely an intriguing player. He's in that class of quarterbacks now that looks like they could all end up being stars. He's got that cannon for an arm. And even in the context of a very difficult offensive situation, he certainly flashed at times this year. The person I'm really interested in is Cohen. You have what promises to be a somewhat difficult timeshare there with Jordan Howard, and they probably will limit each other's upside, but both of those guys have the potential to be very exciting fantasy players since they both have a little bit of dual threat ability. Obviously, Howard more the early down bruiser, but a guy who can catch some passes. And then Cohen, you know, hopefully he doesn't get pigeonholed as simply a receiver, because we've seen him take handoffs and go, you know, 40, 50 yards in a blanket. That could be a very exciting offense. Do you have an outlook for either of those guys? Any other players on the Bears you think could benefit from a coaching change?
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with Cohen. I think Cohen's really exciting under the right circumstances. And basically those circumstances are a good offensive coach who realizes that, you know, having a space back like Cohen is a real asset. And I don't think you have to even be that good of an offensive coach to realize that. So if they get in someone who's going to utilize Cohen more, I'm really excited about him, particularly because I don't think his price in redraft or in dynasty will really be that high. So he sort of immediately goes on the zero running back watch list, wouldn't you say?
I think so. And I'd be interested to see what his ADP ends up being in different formats, because he had so many wild plays that you think of some of the runners who have parlayed maybe a similar skill set into top fantasy finishes. People like Darren Sproles, obviously. And then I don't know that he is quite as far away from the Alvin Kamara, Christian McCaffrey level as it might seem on the surface. Although, again, I mean, you're talking about the limitations of playing with Howard. I don't know that too many people can do what Kamara did with Mark Ingram there to also siphon touches.
Yeah, and the one last guy on the Bears, I mean, if Cameron Meredith came back healthy, I guess he could be, you know, certainly that, you know, the number one option for Trubisky next year. Any interest in him?
I think so. I have him stashed on a few teams, and really we just, this maybe is the team that the coach will determine more than any others where they go going forward, because they have a lot of things that need to be addressed, and they really need to have that McVay type of coach who really turns everything around. And there are some guys out there who potentially fit that template, but the Bears, more than other teams, they have so much at risk and so much riding on this coaching hire.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's get to our interview with Blair Andrews on Twitter at Am I the Real Blair? And we're going to be talking to him about his recent article looking at rookie running backs as it relates to zero running back. And before we do that, though, just want to remind you can get a listener's only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the RotoViz podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. That subscription gives you unlimited access to all of our NFL content, and it'll help support the podcast. You can also support the pod by subscribing to and rating our RotoViz radio channel or RotoViz football show channel on iTunes. And you can always contact us as well on Twitter at RotoViz Radio or via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com. All right, let's get to our interview with Blair. Please welcome to the show, Blair Andrews. You can follow on Twitter at Am I the Real Blair. He's a writer for RotoViz and co-host of the RotoViz Report on RotoViz Radio. Blair, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, for those who aren't familiar with Blair, and I obviously come at this from a very biased perspective. But Blair is one of my favorite authors, not just at RotoViz, but across the entire fantasy community. And I asked him before the season to write an article called The Wrong Read, in which he listened to the various podcasts, which, you know, Blair is very involved in the podcasts. And so that's part of what he does. And then write something that is related to that. So instead of a summary, Blair is actually taking the podcast material and then doing these enhancement articles that I found are some of the best articles we have on the site. Just recently, he wrote a piece talking about how rookie running backs were the key to zero running back this year. So that ties into a few other things we wanted to talk about. So we've got Blair on tonight to talk about the article. And Blair, let's start with your note in the piece that rookie running backs had more top scoring games than any other cohort this season. What did you mean by that? And what are the ramifications for fantasy owners?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for those kind words. So actually, Anthony Amico did a piece in the off season. It was kind of along the same lines. He was just looking at for best ball, you want high scoring weeks. And, you know, the consistency doesn't really matter. So he's kind of measuring which positions had the most high scoring weeks. And then he was on a recent episode of the Highlight Reel to talk about that. So that's kind of what prompted me to dig into this a little bit. But anyway, I'm looking at the top, about the top 300, I think, scoring weeks on the season. So basically, I looked at how each position performed, how many top games they had, and broke it out by the number of years they played, just because, you know, anecdotally, it seems like this was a year when a lot of rookie running backs had some big games. Alvin Kamara, obviously, was huge. Kareem Hunt was huge at the beginning of the year. That seemed kind of unusual, so I was kind of more just curious if there was anything to that. And it turns out that rookie running backs, basically, that cohort, if you were a running back and you were a rookie, you were the most likely to have one of these top 300 scoring weeks. So they accounted for not quite 25, I think, top 5 weeks. And I think the next highest was, I don't know, QBs who had been in the league 6 years or something. But it was quite a ways behind. So yeah, just really interesting finding. I don't know if there's actually much actionable about that, to be honest. It could have been kind of an outlier year. Kind of felt that way. So, yeah, I don't know. It was just a really interesting result.
Well, it was certainly an unusual year, but we had Brian Malone on the show recently, and he wrote an article we talked about a little bit about how rookie running backs perform well during playoff time. And so perhaps if you're in a different sort of league, you might actually want to target rookies when, you know, most of the conventional wisdom is that rookies tend to be overvalued in the fantasy leagues. When you combine what you found and this particular idea of the rookie running backs performing late, do you see this as being a one-year aberration, or would this rookie running back group be something you wanted to target not only perhaps in best ball but also other formats?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd want to obviously, you know, look into it a little bit more. Although, I mean, you know, we've seen rookie running backs come on later in the year. Yeah, exactly, like Brian said. So, you know, David Johnson obviously in his rookie year was huge at the end of the year. And rookie running backs, I mean, are always, it's the position, I guess, this is maybe, I don't know, a little bit cliche. People say it all the time. I don't know how true it is, but rookie, you know, running back is, I guess, maybe the easiest position to learn or something in the NFL. It's just the easiest position to come in and contribute right away as a rookie. So, yeah, there could be something to that as a trend. Going into 2018, I mean, you know, some best ball drafts have started up already, although I don't think you can draft any college players in them yet. But going into 2018, I am definitely looking into that more and strongly considering focusing on rookie running backs later in drafts, not only in best ball leagues, but yeah, probably in all formats.
Jeremy McNichols takes a little bit of issue with you saying that how easy it is to learn the running back position, but One thing that I think is interesting about, you know, this analysis in your article, and also just kind of what we can take about this going forward, is that, you know, even in a big year for running backs, you know, the ones that we, even a big year for kind of the high valued rookie running backs, the ones everyone expected to do well, did in fact, for the most part, do very well, like a Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey. But even in that year, it wasn't just those guys who did well. So, you know, Sean had Kareem Hunt, Alvin Kamara on the zero running back watch list. So I guess what I guess one of the things that kind of jumps out is that from your article is that it's not like you have to target the kind of the hyped rookie running backs that you're going to have to take in the early rounds. You can kind of pepper your later picks with some rookie running backs and still get that same upside potentially, like we saw this year with Hunt and Kamara, who were, you know, absolute league winners, depending on when you drafted Hunt, if you were able to get him, you know, before the Thursday night game or even before Spencer Ware went down, you know, an absolute league winner is a later round pick.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I mean, just to add to those names, there's even, you can think of guys like both the Green Bay running backs, Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones, were even later picks. You know, Corey Clement had some top weeks. Dante Foreman had at least one top week. Tariq Cohen, Austin Eckler even, who was, you know, basically unheard of before the season. These guys weren't even drafted in a lot of leagues. So, you know, if you get to the end of your draft and you have, you know, you're taking flyers anyway, these rookie running backs might have more value, definitely more upside than probably we normally think.
Blair, you also had another interesting article recently where you talked about analyzing what happened in a season and how difficult that is, and that one of the things you can do to help yourself with that difficulty is to assume that anything you did well was luck, and anything that you did poorly was the result of poor decision making. And that if you look at it through that lens, it might help you focus in on really trying to develop areas you can get better. I bring that up because zero running back tends to be a very controversial topic. And one of the things I always tell people is I'm not pushing anyone to use that technique, but I think it's out there for people who can use it well and who are using it in a way where it actually gives them an advantage to where they need fewer things to go right. And I've used zero running back the last 3 years in the MFL 10 of Death, put together by Pat Thorman with a great group of guys who are among my favorites in the industry. It's a fun league to play. And I've used zero running back in it each of the last three seasons and finished first, second, and first. And I mentioned that because that's obviously luck, right? But looking at it in the lens of zero running back, we had this idea of, okay, 2015 was a very good year for zero running back. 2016 was a very poor year. And then this last year, I think, was more of an average type of year, even though it's somewhat controversial within the context of Todd Gurley being such a league winner. But the thing that I think is interesting is that it puts you in a situation where you don't need as many things to go right. And you know, there's also discussions about what really counts as your running back, but you can't really wait a long time. Well, for this particular league, I didn't draft a running back until round 10. And that was Kareem Hunt. That was after five wide receivers, two tight ends, and two quarterbacks. And just with that pick, within the context of those other players, I had such a huge advantage. Now, that ties into this idea of your article. And I think, again, this idea of understanding where you actually want to have a lot of predictability and where you might take more chaos and trying to benefit from that chaos. So we hear people talk a lot about players who have a small range of outcomes and players who have a large range of outcomes, and labeling those things good or bad depending on that person's view of how you play fantasy football. But I think that that is perhaps too simplistic. What we really want to know is what areas of a draft do we want to have small ranges of outcomes and which areas we want to have large ranges of outcomes. And that's interesting to me in terms of the article that you wrote, because the idea of zero running back is to get the small range of outcomes players early and then to get the larger range of outcomes players late. And rookie running backs are going to be great examples of this large range of outcomes because, number one, they're rookies, We don't know how they're going to adjust to the NFL. We don't know if these college stars are really going to make the transition. And then just with the running back position in particular, you have so much movement during the course of the season. Would you say that that's an accurate picture of what's happening and what you were looking at? Or is that sort of trying to force this idea and this justification for zero running back into what just happened in this particular year?
No, I think that's exactly right. It reminded me of something I read. I think Jonathan Bales wrote it in maybe one of his books. He talks about how he when you do well in fantasy, it's definitely due a lot to luck. But if you're good at it, if you're putting in the work, you can put yourself in positions to benefit from luck in ways that other people can't. And so, yeah, I think a focus on rookie running backs late in drafts where you are trying to use uncertainty to your benefit, I think definitely puts you in a position to, for things to break your way, I guess.
Before we let you go, give us your favorite wrong read of the season and maybe what you're looking at coming up.
Yeah, I mean, this one on rookie running backs was a lot of fun to write. I also did one earlier in the season, it's kind of a mid-season or mid to late season, kind of look back at what had gone on with the running back and wide receiver scoring. The title of that was "Is Zero RB Dead?" Kind of clickbaity, but that one got a lot of discussion on the forums. So that was a fun one to write and to continue to talk about. And then I don't know, as far as looking forward, I'm hoping to write a lot more about some prospects, I guess, but it's hard to predict what kind of in the nature of the case of this article. It's just hard to predict where it's going to go. So,
all right. Well, Blair, thanks so much for joining us. Everyone make sure to follow Blair on Twitter at @AmITheRealBlair. And check out his future articles and check out some of the Wrong Read articles as well. Great pieces. Blair, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for listening to RotoViz Radio, the flagship RotoViz podcast. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the established RotoViz Radio feed. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter @RotoVizRadio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/radio.